Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbreaker and I'd like to wish you all a very happy and peaceful Christmas with this seasonal program. But before we begin, I thought I'd bring you a report on the weekly general audience of Pope Francis with pilgrims from across the world. For this, we join Chris Wells.
In his catechesis at the General Audience on Wednesday, the Holy Father reflected on the Nativity of Jesus, the feast of confidence and hope that overcomes uncertainty and pessimism. The reason for our hope, he said, is this: God is with us, and God still trusts us. God is willed to share our human condition to the point of making himself one of us in the person of Jesus, who is true man and true God, the Pope said. But even more surprising is that Jesus becomes man not in an ideal world, an idyllic world, but in this real world, marked by so many things good and bad, marked by divisions, wickedness, poverty, arrogance, and wars. The birth of Jesus, the Pope said, brings us the good news that we are loved immensely and individually by God. And God not only helps us to know this love for each of us, but also gives and communicates this love to us. Pope Francis concluded his audience by pointing out two considerations we can take away from these reflections on the Nativity of Jesus. The first is that God reveals himself not as one who remains on high and dominates the universe, but as one who humbles himself. This shows us that in order to be like him, we must not put ourselves above others, but must humble ourselves and serve others. The second consideration is that if Jesus has become one of us, then whatever we do for a brother or a sister, we do for him. Jesus himself reminds us, the Pope said, he who has fed, welcomed, visited, and loved one of the smallest and poorest of people has done it for the Son of God. I'm Christopher Wells.
Well, our thanks there go to Chris Wells. We all like singing carols at Christmas, but we often don't know their origin. Music historian Monsignor Philip Whitmore helps us out.
Joyful news of Christ's birth has inspired Christians throughout the centuries to sing the praises of God. Christmas carols are among the best loved of all forms of sacred music. In England, carols were very popular in the later Middle Ages. One of the few that has survived more or less intact over the centuries is the Coventry Carol. Many carols use folk melodies, so it's quite hard to say just how old they are. In their present form, they're usually from the 19th or 20th centuries. That's to say, they were discovered and arranged for publication and popular use in recent times. One of the great pioneers of research into English folk song was a man called Cecil Sharp. Here's a Christmas carol that he discovered for us at Chipping Campden in Gloucestershire. Another important figure in the rediscovery of English folk songs was Ralph Vaughan Williams. He was also interested in hymns. In fact, he composed a number of well-known hymns himself, and he edited the English Hymnal. One of the Christmas carols we associate with him uses a folk melody that he discovered in Sussex, still known today as the Sussex Carol.
Oh,
after the Reformation in England, carol singing more or less died out. Certainly there was no place for carols in the Reformed liturgy, because it was forbidden to sing non-scriptural texts in church. This meant no hymn singing at all, except for the Psalms. One of the first Christmas carols to establish itself in England after the Reformation was While Shepherds Watched. And of course, if you look closely at the text, you'll see that it's practically all taken from St. Luke's Gospel. So it was the first Christmas hymn, and for more than 80 years, the only one permitted to be used in Anglican churches. Meanwhile, the English Catholic community was either underground or in exile on the continent. One of the major centres was Douai in Flanders. At the English College in Douai, priests were trained to serve on the English mission. And here came to birth one of the most famous of all Christmas carols, O Come All Ye Faithful, or Adeste Fideles, to use its Latin title. Both the words and the music are attributed to John Francis Wade, who was a professor there during the 18th century. It was first published in England in the 1780s, and it's been a firm favourite ever since. Many of the carols we sing today are of German origin. In fact, so too are many of the traditions surrounding our celebration of Christmas, such as the Christmas tree or Tannenbaum. Unlike their Anglican counterparts, the Lutheran reformers encouraged hymn singing. Listen to the traditional German carol Es ist ein Rose entsprungen, associated with the 17th century Lutheran composer Michael Praetorius. One of the best loved of all German carols is In Dulci Jubilo. The text is half in Latin and half in German. J.S. Bach used the tune in a choral setting and also in some of his organ chorale preludes. But it's best known to English-speaking congregations in a 19th century arrangement by Robert Pearsall, which is half in Latin and half in English. Thank you. Probably the best-known German or rather Austrian carol is Stille Nacht, or Silent Night. This was written on Christmas Eve 1818 for the village church in Oberndorf, just north of Salzburg. Since then, it's taken the world by storm. By the 19th century, hymn singing had come to be accepted in the Church of England. Members of the Wesley family produced many of the new hymn texts. Charles Wesley's Christmas hymn, Hark the Herald Angels Sing, was matched with a tune by Felix Mendelssohn to produce one of the best-loved of all Christmas carols. Mendelssohn had originally written the tune for secular words, and he wasn't sure it would work with a sacred text. He needn't have worried. Speaking of angels singing leads me on to one or two French Christmas carols. The French had their own tradition of Noël, as they were called, few of which are familiar to English speakers today. But I think you might recognise this one, adapted to English words.
Angels speak of her.
Tried singing that Gloria after a few Christmas drinks. It's quite a challenge. Another popular French carol using a folk melody from the Provençal region is known as the March of the Kings. Now, if you're familiar with that tune, it could be because you've heard it in the version used by Georges Bizet in his suite L'Arlésienne. Well, wherever you're spending Christmas, I do hope you'll have the opportunity to celebrate by singing some of the great heritage of carols that have come down to us over the centuries, from different countries, even from different continents. There's some very fine music among them, and how right that it should be so. Only the best is good enough to sing the praises of the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace.
Warm thanks there go to Monsignor Philip Whitmore, a music historian who's currently rector of the Venerable English College here in Rome. Now time to go on a Roman tour with our Professor of Fine Arts, Brita Ennis. As you probably know, here in Rome, most churches have a Christmas crib installed in time for Christmas. But there's one church where this doesn't happen. It just stays there all year. So stay tuned as Brita and myself step into the church of Santa Maria in Via and take a left turn.
The Nativity began in the 13th century.
Because St. Francis of Assisi was the first person to celebrate midnight mass on Christmas night with a crib, with live oxen and donkeys, live animals.
Well, this one isn't alive. It's not dead either, is it? There's a lot going on here. I think for our listeners who are not familiar with cribs, we ought to say that generally speaking, there are three elements in a crib, aren't there? There's the Nativity, obviously, then there's the Annunciation with the angels, and finally, there's always a tavern scene. Am I right, Brita?
Well, yes, this is obviously what came afterwards, because the original scene itself is just a central scene, the Nativity. Mary, the child Jesus, and St. Joseph, and shepherds, and the two animals, the ox and the ass.
You know what's missing, Brita? The shepherds.
The shepherds are generally there for Christmas, and the 6th of January they're replaced by the Magi.
I don't know where they'll find a place to put them. I'm quite wrong. I spy a shepherd, actually, who's fast asleep. There's always a shepherd that's asleep in these cribs.
Here, in fact, we have a little bit of everything from the time of St. Francis, and this is shown in one of Giotto's frescoes in the higher church at Assisi, with the crib St. Francis himself had in the past.
So what about this crib, Brita? Let's describe it a little bit. The central element is the Nativity scene. There are a lot of angels above this temple, actually. Very often they use temples, don't they?
To give a sense of drama to the background and make it very, very Italian in its own sense. And also, you think that Rome is the home of Christianity in the practical sense, I mean, apart from Jerusalem and everything in the past. But
it used to be pagan, therefore a lot of sacred Rome is built over pagan temples.
Pagan temples, but also they Christianized pagan things. So here you have a large Roman archway, like a triumphal arch in the middle, on top of which you can see the scene, which is full of gyrating angels. They all seem so light and happy. Well, they seem like they're just going to float out of the crib. And then below that, then you see Mary in pink robes, blue mantle, and the child Jesus with a very elaborate halo around his head. And
I thought that in Italian tradition they only put child Jesus into the crib after Christmas Eve.
Exactly, yes. But this is actually a permanent crib. In the 1700s it was done in Naples. This is a genuine Neapolitan crib, but it's so famous that they actually leave it up all the year. To take a child to see this here, it would bring him into the fantasy of the world of the birth in a manger in the Holy Land. Generally, children, looking at the details, they'll be able to get in little by little into the story and understand the simplicity, the sacred quality of the story itself. Here in the front, I see they have very elaborately garbed Magi.
We're talking silk and damask,
yes,
aren't we? And lace, and real lace.
Yes, and old lace, and old silk and damask.
Brita, correct me if I'm wrong, but collecting figurines was the pastime of wealthy Neapolitans, because these are not just ordinary figurines, they're very special, aren't they?
Yeah.
Are they just wired inside? Because they seem to be gesticulating and almost movable.
Yes, but generally the inside is made of different types of materials, and the hands and the neck and face are made of porcelain and painted. Now, it was a tradition also in Naples for important artists to hand paint or prepare the faces for the different images. And it was considered an honour for an artist to do this, because in that way they participated in the miracle of the birth. Here what they try to do is to bring it as near as possible to a Roman daily reality, so that you see on the top here you see a house with the clothes hanging out over the balcony. And then
there's lots of food around here.
Tons. Well, that's Italian. What's nice here is this fountain, this tiny fountain, which looks like a cross between the Bocca della Verità and something else. But you can actually see little strings hanging down over the basin of the fountain. It makes it look like real water. They've tried in every way to make it look realistic.
Yeah, there's a fire there, fireplace.
Yes,
there.
Yeah.
There's someone stoking the fire.
Yes. Looks like they're going to make pizzas or something like that. Like
in the tavern, of course, with all the hams hanging and the salamis hanging on the tavern door. No?
Yeah. Here you have a little bit of everyday life. You have daily life in terms of houses and work and housework and cooking and buying food. And over here, evening type of entertainment and whatever. Then architecturally, you have all these Roman type ruins with the Corinthian columns, etc. And then way behind in the distance, you have against the blue horizon, a view of the Bay of Naples. So there's a combination here of Naples and Rome. Nothing takes away from the central scene. It remains, it pulls you in. The central scene, also look at the expression on the face of one of the men near Mary, a sense of ecstasy, total ecstasy and meditation, which contrasts, obviously, with the faces of the people beside.
That was Professor Breda Ennis, who's currently teaching fine arts at the American University of Rome. Finally, on a totally different note, it's time for a little bit of quirky and informative entertainment. That's with our favourite Carmelite, known as our popular Latin lover. His name, Father Reginald Foster. It's Christmas time again. I think what we could say about it today is that it's quite de-Christianized in a way, no?
Indulis Christiane privatio, depriving the thing of its Christian character.
So we get Christmas cards, seeing as we're on the theme of someone like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. How do you say Rudolph?
Rudolphus reno naso cum rubro.
Rubro is red.
With
naso,
a red nose.
Yeah. And Rudolfo, you didn't say reindeer there.
Reno is
reindeer.
reindeer.
And you
Rudolphus
sometimes...
reno naso cum rubro. That sounds nice.
And if Father Christmas spoke Latin, what would he say? Like ho, ho, ho in Latin?
Well, no. Ea, ea, or something like that. The Romans had their own inflammations. Eu.
I just want to prompt you into the real meaning of Christmas here. Nativity. Nativity comes from the Latin...
Nascor, to be born.
To be born.
So natus, having been born, nativitas, birth. All the words are all connected.
I think that the image of the nativity is of the cave at Bethlehem, maybe. We can say that, no? What comes to mind to you, the cave at Bethlehem, perhaps?
I don't know about a cave. We have this thing. All the gospel says that there was no place for them in the, what they call the diversorio, in the encampment, the inn-like for the pilgrims. So they were somewhere. I don't know whether it was a cave or not.
So no place in the encampment. How would you say that in Latin?
There was a non era locus eis in diversorio. The diversorium is like a hotel, kind of a... We'd go off the road into this place. Diversorio.
It's like an inn.
Yeah, like an inn, yeah.
So,
that's what the gospel says.
But the images the painters have, the artists have...
Whether it was a cave or whether it was someone else's house, I don't even know.
How do you say cave in Latin?
Antrum and caverna and specus and all kinds of words.
Another thing one does at Christmas to celebrate the birth of Christ is to sing carols, right? I have a hymnal here, which starts with Matins, Christe Redemptor Omnium.
Oh, yeah, it's one of the best things in the world.
Christe Redemptor Omnium, what does that mean?
Christ the Redeemer of all,
people. So I want to do the opposite now, and I would like you to translate the fifth verse of this for me, if you could do that. If you want to look at the book here, it says, earth, sea, and sky. So earth is terra, no?
Oh, we're putting this into Latin now. Oh,
yeah.
I see. Terra, mare, celum.
By threefold plan.
Triplex dispositio tua.
and all that heaven's wide vault doth span.
Et omnia, this is all from scripture, et omnia quae celi circuitu continentur.
Echo thy praise in mute accord.
Tuam resonant laudem tacita concordia or tacito consensu.
To greet the advent of their Lord.
Ut Domini sui salutent adventum.
So this was just something I picked. What would you pick as a Christmas carol or Christmas music?
It would be, our Gregorian chant, which we sang in class.
For example? I have a list here.
Some of them are out of this world.
Is there one you particularly like there that we can play for our listeners?
Christi Redemptor Omnium. That's the thing there.
Yeah.
That's one of the best. It's really extraordinarily beautiful.
Is there a Christmas carol that you think the Latins would have enjoyed?
Joy to the World.
Why do you think they would have enjoyed Joy to the World?
Just the way it flows. The music and the ideas, too.
Can you explain? And how do you say Joy to the World in
Latin? Gaudium toti orbi, or toti gaudium orbi, joy to the whole world. Joy to the world, the Lord has come, Advenit Dominus.
Do you have a special message to our listeners? Christmas greeting for our listeners.
Ut eorum Christus repleat animos et domos, ut prosperet opera et concilia, et ut novum concedat eis prosperimumque annum. Okay, that the Lord may fill their hearts and
can
homes.
Can you just break it down slowly?
Dominus replia. I think I said animos et domos. May he fill their hearts and homes. Prosperet. May he prosper their concilia et opera, their plans and works. Et tribuat eis, concedat, any word you want. Novum annum prosperimumque. A new and most prosperous year. It's always been more beautiful in Latin.
We send these Christmas greetings through the airwaves, I would say. How does one say through the airwaves?
Per undas aereas. Per undas per aereas.
Our popular Latin lover, Carmelite Father Reginald Foster, was for many years and under many popes papal Latinist and is currently teaching Latin in the United States. That brings me up to time. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Very happy and peaceful Christmas to you all. Laudetur Jesus Christus.